Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on the Everything app at jwright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to keep listening, you can do so on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. We're also streaming live on TuneIn Radio as well as iHeartRadio. You can check out the live streams going over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Ruggiero is, of course, the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How's it going?
Other than it being absolutely freezing in our studio, and normally I always used to keep a pullover or some type of extra layer for these set opportunities. I took all that stuff out of my car.
Oh, you were
yesterday.
Thinking we're right at the cusp. It's going to start getting too warm to really need it.
Yeah, so
you got a rain jacket in mind if you need it.
We'll get through it. Maybe it's keeping me alert. So other than that, things are going well. Let's welcome to the program. He, of course, writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports. You can follow him on the Everything app at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
It's a great day. Whenever you got a major championship going on, it's a great day.
We do have a major championship going on. We have the PGA. It is nice to have a major championship, Cobb, where you can basically watch every shot, because ESPN just like cranks it up at like 7 in the morning, and then they've got coverage all day.
Yeah, woke up, rolled out of bed, and it was on the TV. You can't beat that. I didn't have to.
Well, you got real Southern there. The TV. It's like the Walmart. Yeah, the TV. Like when we put the in front of stuff that doesn't need it.
Oh, so we do this ironically, but now it's become a thing. Like Sarah and I, we say, like, you want to go to McDonald's?
Yeah, McDonald's. Did your grandmother say Washington?
Well, she said when she was referring to something small, she, God bless her soul, she would say T90. Instead of small, or that, you know, he's a little guy, she would say, oh, he's just a T90 little fella. So, like, all these things, you know, that you say ironically, now I say, it's like, well, I don't know if I want a McDonald's, but how about a Wendy? You want a Wendy? You know,
let's
and
see.
Now it's just, I say program. Oh, yeah. What, are there any good new programs on Netflix?
Ah, that's like, a good one. A television pro. Yeah.
I said it ironically at first, and now I just say it. Now it's like not even a bit anymore. It's just like what I call TV shows.
Yeah, it basically took like a decade for my grandmother to have passed away for us to stop saying hurricane. It's a hurricane.
Hurricane.
Wait, what, Sadie?
Yeah, you got Mississippi roots, don't you?
Well, she's West Tennessee. She was a Humboldt.
Oh, well,
so my dad's family's Mississippi. My mom's family's like West Tennessee. Like,
oh man, you're as deep south as it gets.
Like we're, you know, they're all like Humboldt, Milan.
Oh yeah, halfway to Paducah. Yeah,
big cities. Area. Oh yeah, that's my mom's side of the family. Speaking of hilarious, did you see the quote from Drew Hill's story? I put it
about
up,
Caleb Wilson.
I put it
talking
up on
about
the Everything app. Cobb, like, I think sometimes we can all like fall into the hyperbole. I'm reading David's story and I just involuntarily laughed out loud. This was what Caleb Wilson had to say when asked about Memphis and the Grizzlies. One interesting thing about Memphis is that they're in the Western Conference, even though they're on the eastern side of the United States. So I feel like that would be really cool.
Hey, at least you didn't say, I've heard they have bad hotels.
Brent Scoggins then replied with maybe one of like the perfect reaction clip. It's Michael Scott at the wedding.
Well, it's Pam and Jim's wedding. Yeah.
No. It's Bob Vance.
Oh, Phyllis's wedding.
Phyllis's wedding. And about the finer things, you know, the fine foods. And he's sniffing the white wine. He's like, this is a white. Like it was the perfect, just like the perfect. It's like, because, you know, they're all, in fairness to them, like they're all getting asked by, you know, local reporters, say something nice essentially about every single city that's there covering the draft. And they may not have anything to say. Now, this is where we start cooking with some gas. I wonder if they, we know in 2019, I believe this was some, you were, I think you were still technically covering them, right?
Yeah, the 2019 draft, that was the Ja, Brandon Clark draft.
We found out they told Ja at the lottery they were taking him.
Did they? When did we find that out?
It was later revealed after the fact, but they told him at the lottery.
Yeah.
Now, that also was a lot cleaner draft. Everybody knew Zion was going one, and then for a little bit, a hot second, it felt like there was, you know, some R.J. Barrett.
No.
But
Okay, there was buzz. Here's what happened.
Let me say it. Media-wise,
Let me tell you my story I know you're going to tell your story at the end of the show. I'm going to tell my story right now.
By all means.
I was covering the Grizzlies during this 2019 draft. So obviously you're bridging the eras there. That's the coming off of Jaren's rookie season. Mark Gasol traded in February. You get the lottery bounce, you know, and so I devoted the entire lead up to the draft to covering the Grizzlies selecting Ja Morant, right? I went up to Murray. I spent time with Matt McMahon. I did a 3-part series on Ja Morant's college career and kind of how that experience prepared him for life in a small market and, you know, all that sort of thing, right? Well, then, like 3 nights before the draft.
By the way, I wish a few executives might have read that, but continue.
Right. Well, I mean, at risk of relitigating the entire job.
Well, no, my point would be, I think there were some people in the front office that were a little insecure about Memphis, and I don't think they realized for a kid from basically the middle of nowhere, South Carolina, who went to Murray State, Memphis was the big city.
Yeah, right. Like, exactly right. Like, Murray has a Buffalo Wild Wings, and then
they got a Beat-Ups?
Yeah. Huh. Big moves. But anyway, who was that old Vesey, Peter Vesey? Old media.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's probably like 80. He used to be like the Woj of the 90s, apparently, which, like, I don't even know how you could be the Woj of the 90s. Yeah,
how do you be the Woj before the internet?
I guess he broke stuff in print. I don't know. Like, anyway, he put something on Twitter. Well, I had this moronic boss who none of y'all know because he's never actually worked in Memphis because that's how Gannett worked, right? He didn't work in Memphis, but had no experience covering professional sports. Jeffrey, you can text me 3 guesses and you'll probably get it. Just had no idea what he was doing.
I'm pretty sure he is no longer with the company. I think I know who you're. I'm nearly certain.
We'll talk about him this weekend. But he's like, David, did you see Peter Vesey said the Grizzlies might take R.J. Barrett with the number 2 pick? We have to do coverage on this. And I'm like, no, they're not doing it.
Absolutely not.
It's like, I'm the beat writer. Like, on some level, I understand, okay, some old guy said this might happen who used to be a guy in the media. Okay. Like, if you want to have your trending engagement, like, aggregation farmer do something on this, fine, by all means. Don't make the beat writer who has to maintain relationships with people in the front office and on the team going right that the Grizzlies might take R.J. Barrett. I'm not doing that. Like, it made me so mad. Anyway, yeah, so there was speculation.
By the way, the only other Peter Vesey reference I can think of in the last decade is at the start of the season, remember NBC like did the throwback broadcast? I think they brought back Doug Collins. Like, they, like, you know, they were paying homage. I guess they didn't invite Vesey, and Vesey was at some point a part of the broadcast, and he was very offended.
In all due respect to Peter Vesey, I'm sorry. I'm not up on who the newsbreakers of the NBA were in the early 90s. Like, that's on me. He may be a Hall of Famer. He's not.
He actually is. 2009. He's in the media. You know, the Basketball Hall of Fame, the Kurt Gowdy Award.
He's had an unbelievable career, a better career in media than I'll ever have. Like, good for him. But in the year 2019, we ain't taking what Peter Vesey is tweeting as if it's Shams or Woj or even Chris Haynes or, you know, Sam Vecenie, right? Like, there's 25 other media who I would maybe consider basing content around what they post, but like he is so far off that list. And anyway, lo and behold, the Grizzlies selected Ja Morant. But to your larger point, before I took us down that rabbit hole, that draft was far more regimented in terms of us knowing what was going to happen, as opposed to even this one, where it still feels like there's at least some uncertainty around, especially Derrick Peterson.
Well, I was actually gonna talk to you about this because I'd be curious to know what are the metrics saying? Because what I have found interesting, and maybe this is a local problem because it is an issue for here. Basically, starting Sunday, I don't know if you've caught wind of this. Have you chosen a side? Are you Cam or Caleb? You have to. By the way,
those two, I'm Cam.
Okay.
Although in the show prep, you had a really interesting breakdown of maybe why maybe I'm wrong, but
no, I'm with you. I'm actually Team Cam.
Okay.
But we decided, like, you know, if you would have asked us on Friday, I think you're in the same camp. You like both players, right?
I do.
I do too. But if I have to pick one, I'm picking Cam.
Yes.
So, but we've weirdly turned this into, like, it's kind of become like a microcosm of, like, the world. It's almost become like a political debate. The boomers, they're right wingers, all conservatives, you're a Cam person. And anyone that's new age, hip, progressive, you're all Caleb. But it almost feels to me like the debate at three is a bigger story, or at least it is generating more interest. I don't think it's 100% certain DeBontz is going one.
Yeah, I think it's close. I mean, I'd say it's like 90% certain,
well,
but not 100.
I guess I should say this. I don't think it's 100% DeBonta goes one to Washington.
Yeah. You think there could be some shifting among who
Correct.
Has that number one pick. Yeah.
Correct.
No, I think that's within the realm of possibility. I mean, that's actually kind of been tossed around. Like, it's not necessarily reported.
I don't think Utah's publicly playing coy, but I don't think they've really hidden the fact that, I mean, Ryan Smith is largely responsible for A.J. DeBonta being at BYU, his alma mater, the school that he supports. I think it's pretty obvious they would like to continue the relationship.
Yeah, well, then, and for that matter, the DeBonta family.
That's what I'm saying. I think both parties.
Well, he played his last season of high school ball in Utah. Went to BYU. Like, they're settled there. They're one draft slot away from that being a perfect marriage. You know, and for the longest time, Derrick Peterson was going to be the number one overall pick. And you were kind of – people told me I was crazy in November and December when I was like, I don't know, I kind of like AJ. Kind of like AJ at one. It's like, nah, look at the betting odds. It's not going to happen. Derrick Peterson, forget all this health stuff. And then it's finally like NBA draft world is like 6 weeks behind college basketball world on some of this stuff. It's like they finally realize it after we've been talking about it for over a month. And it's like, oh, wow, this Derrick Peterson guy's got some real issues. And it's like, where have you been? Like, and it just took the whole collective universe a long time to get there. So it's got to be maddening if you're Utah, because, like, for the longest time, you would have said, yeah, we'll be two. We can get AJ DeBonta at two. And then now it's like, well, no, you can't. Here's the other thing as it pertains to the Grizzlies. I don't think the Utah Jazz have any need for Cam Boozer. I mean, they have Walker Kessler and Jaren Jackson Jr. And, I mean, what? Laurie Markkanen's on that team, right? Or
sure is.
Yeah.
And so
I guess you could make the argument, if you really believe in him, like, because that's kind of the other – you have to believe that – by drafting him at a position that is not a position of need, by taking him, that means like you believe in him at a really, really high level. Well, I mean, now you can trade some of those pieces.
Well, you could, but you just landed Jaren. You've worked hard to
I don't think it would make sense to trade Jaren, but I guess the flip side of it is like, hey, man, are you going to really want to pay every single one of those guys? Like, maybe you flip them now. I mean, is it possible they believe that Jaren's going to be playing the five?
Yeah, well, okay. So they got Markkanen under contract through 28-29 at 50 mil a year, roughly. Jaren, same deal. He's going up to 50 mil a year here in a couple years. And then also Walker Kessler, who they have under team control. That's a really nice contract for them right now. Yusuf Nurkic coming off the books. And then they got, you know, as you mentioned, George, Kyle Filipowski. He's on a really team-friendly deal, and a guy who's obviously shown a little bit as well. So, I mean, they'd have to move either Filipowski and or Walker Kessler, and those are really team-friendly contracts, because I don't know that you're going to find a taker for 4 years, $50 million for Lauri Markkanen.
Unless they play Markkanen to the three and just go uber long.
Jeez, then you got Ace Bailey, too. They just got a lot of big dudes.
Well, I mean, they might be trading Ace Bailey to the Wizards to get the number one pick.
Wouldn't that be ironic?
Can I be honest? If that's the cost to move up one spot, I think that's too much. I think Ace Bailey's a phenomenal player.
See, agreed. I was almost thinking, because in the end, you know, like Utah can play it coy.
Yeah.
But like in the end, they want the player. Like, and not only do they want the player, this is the best of both worlds. If you're Washington, the owner wants the player.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm just saying, I don't know,
You can have a front office debate about your value chart.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Well, if Ryan Smith walks in and goes, I want A.J. DeBonta, make it happen.
Figure it out.
Guess what?
Sorry, yeah, and if you're Washington, I'd be willing to play ball because, either way, one of these two elite prospects.
I agree with you in the sense that we were both watching early in the fall, like, what are we missing? Like, how is this just like open and shut? It's just Peterson. I do also think it's entirely possible that Peterson is the better prospect.
Well, I think he's the highest upside prospect in this draft class, and that's why.
Oh, you're not allowed to say that.
No,
well, no, who's got a you're not upside? Allowed.
How dare you?
It's Caleb Wilson.
Nah, Darren Peterson's got MVP level shot making, and I it keeps getting into this. Okay, here's what
I think.
Have
you not seen the Instagram videos?
I understand.
That's future
Caleb
Kevin Garnett to you, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Kareem?
Oh,
who else has he been comped to?
You name it, who Caleb's been comped to.
By the way, okay. I think also, I used to be the leader of this charge. We don't have a Dookie on the roster right now.
Ooh.
And Zach Kleiman's got a couple of rules.
He also
there
has a
must
law degree
be
to do.
A Dookie
at
I
all
guess
times.
We don't.
Yeah, yeah. R.I.P. Luke Kennard.
Yeah.
So,
do you realize how hard that must have been to let one walk?
I mean, he had Tyus Jones. He had Luke Kennard. He had Grayson Allen. At
he
one
traded
point.
For Justice Winslow.
Oh my gosh, you're right. What a track record here. I think that's all the evidence you need that they're going Cam Boozer at three.
I also think this is true. I think we were talking about this yesterday. Of the 30 teams, one thing I'd really like to see is show me your real big board. I bet there is more discrepancy of who everybody has at one than probably most other drafts.
Oh, I think there's more discrepancy all the way up and down this board within franchises than you might see in a normal NBA draft.
Yeah.
I mean, the beauty lies in the eye of the beholder with so many of these players, in particular this group of guards, right? Like
sure.
The group of guards, there's a lot of discrepancy there. The bigs are so kind of what's your flavor, I feel like, that you could have varying opinions on the bigs. And then, I mean, to your point, like I would have advocated in February, in fact, I did on this show, like let's talk about Cam Boozer at number one. Now I've cooled off of that, and not just because I want him to play for the Grizzlies, but like before I ever knew where the Grizzlies were going to be in the draft, saw him struggle a little bit against longer players down the stretch and thought, okay, maybe there's some limitations there physically that should exclude him from the number one overall pick conversation. So I'm still like, there's going to be a lot of the speculation on what's going to happen 1-2. And then you got but to me, it still feels very clearly delineated. It's AJ and Darren Peterson 1-2, whichever order, probably AJ 1. And then you've got Cam Boozer and Caleb Wilson, whatever order, 3-4. Then you get to 5 through, say, 10, which will most likely be all, if not almost all, guards. I think that's the way it's going to pan out. Like, there's a long way to go, over a month until we get there. interviews could change, medicals could change the conversation, trades could happen. But like, I would bet on that outcome. AJ slash Darren 1-2, Caleb slash Cam 3-4, mostly guards 5-10.
I think I'm even willing to go stronger. I think I agree with you on 1-2. I think Cam is definitely going 3. I think Wilson's definitely going 4. And then I think on the guards, I mean, this is the other thing that we were talking about. I think I've decided if it is true that the Clippers are, let's just say, concerned that the investigation into Kawhi Leonard's salary cap circumvention goes against them and that they're going to get hit hard. And the belief is their way out of that, or, you know, dealing with that, is trying to get more picks. I think I kind of want the Grizzlies to move up, pay the steep price, what I'm sure is going to be to move up to 5, and you get whoever you deem to be the best guard. I mean, obviously we know who I would want, which is Acuff. But if you could walk out of that draft with Acuff and with Boozer, I mean, all of a sudden, like, you want to talk about just like shot of life into the fan base. Like, I think everybody would be pumped.
Well, to your point, if you had asked me a month ago, would you prefer 3-16 or would you rather have 6-10? I think I might have struggled with that. Now I look at it, I'm like, man, 6-10 might have actually been preferable. In that scenario, you're getting the number 2 guard, right, in that group. Maybe it's your favorite. Maybe the fifth pick, the Clippers, maybe they go with something else. Maybe they go with Kingston Flemings, and then you can have Acuff or Keaton Wagler. And then at 10, you could get your pick of the non-Cam Boozer Caleb Wilson power forward. So you could get a Yaxel, which, by the way, comments from Yaxel. Don't know if you saw those from Drew Hill. Pretty good, but somebody pointed out, rightfully so, hey, look, Mario Chalmers ended up being a Grizzly, so we could make it work.
The irony is like the day that like everyone decided that they were willing to, you know, let bygones be bygones, he just pops his Achilles. It's like everybody, man. Like he was becoming like a legitimately like beloved player. Like he was becoming a fan favorite and then just bam, pops his Achilles. Like, that's awesome.
But my point is, I feel lukewarm at the moment about 16, not knowing who's going to be there, but looking at mocks that have the Grizzlies still taking a guard under the assumption they're going to take Boozer with 3, so they're going to take a guard with their second pick in the first round. All right, who's there at 16? I mean, there is ESPN mock had them with Christian Anderson?
Yeah, I think Jeremy Wu did that. But, I mean, are we also certain is he for sure staying in the draft?
Believe so. I think he's staying,
I've seen others that like had him just taking Koa Pete, who we also have no idea if he's going to stay in. I think it seems like...
Well, he's had a bad week.
That's why it sounds like a bad week. And it sounds like that is a legitimate decision. But I think that's the other question. So they're going to have a decent amount of cap space. If you're in that spot that we're talking about, because to your point about 3-16... The problem with 3-16, and it's a great problem to have. I'm glad that we actually get to debate, like, oh, well, maybe they can't get the order of the good players that they would like. Like, it's fun to actually, like, think about that. But it did feel like by getting 3, everybody kind of had the assumption that the Grizzlies were going to get the guard first. And this flips it, and it felt like it was a draft where there was probably better value in front court players kind of in the middle part of the draft, in that 10 to 16 range that we're talking about. It felt like there was better value there, and it felt like, to your point, that there's just going to be this run on guards, and it's going to be like an NFL draft run when somebody takes a receiver and then here comes 5 teams taking receivers and then you're left with nothing. That's kind of why I think I've decided, and I get it, you got to have a trade partner. If they can, even if we sit there and go, man, that price was kind of steep to move up, I think if they move up and they get one of the guards and Cam, like I'm pretty thrilled.
The good thing is you've got tradable pieces. I mean, you've got a surplus on your roster right now. You've got future draft assets, and this is the draft to cash those in on. And not to mention, you have the number 32 pick as well. Like,
well, I'm also
got a lot of success in that range. You think about some of the players they've landed late first, early second. Like,
when I saw, I think Jeremy Wu, I think he even mocked Caravan to him. I was like, oh man, like we really are just becoming like the Connecticut Blue Devils.
You have Alex Caravan and Cam Spencer on the same team. Yep. That's a couple of championship winning snipers right there. Huskies and Grizzlies, there's some wintertime sort of predator similarities there. I like it. Yep.
Yeah, and in the warm weather, or in a city that's in the East. But they play in the Western Conference.
In the East, yes.
I mean, that's kind of the other thing. This was making George laugh. Like, it is literally like maybe the perfect quote of all time. Like, there's so much meat on the bone by saying nothing. But even as George's point is, like, we're literally, like, if you use the dividing line of East versus West, traditionally, the Mississippi River, we could not be any further, like, on the line than literally where we are.
In fact, there is a West Memphis, which correct. I guess according to Caleb Wilson, that's the West.
Well, a good portion of the market is west of the dividing line.
Yeah. He is such a nice, nice young man. Like, if the Grizzlies end up with Caleb Wilson, I'm not going to be disappointed.
No, I'm with you, but it's like if I have to make a pick, I'm betting on Cam. But if they left with Cam with Caleb Wilson, I'm not sitting there going like, damn.
People are going to fall in love with that guy. And they will with Cam because of the way he plays, because of the gritty. Like, they're not going to, like, watch his introductory press conference where he holds up the jersey and smiles and takes
speaking
a picture of
Kleiman. Speaking of, would he wear 12?
Oh. Well, they're not retiring it, so
they are not retiring it.
You know, the one he would hold up would be some other number, but then the one he would eventually wear would be
12. He'd have to – you just got to do, like, the old school NFL draft where even if you were pick 15, they just handed you the number one. Right. Like you were the first round pick.
Yeah.
I think you got to do, because I also think it's true. Whenever they introduce him, I think Ja will still technically be on the roster.
He will probably so. Yeah.
Cause I don't think they'll move him until what? Probably after free agency.
I would assume. I mean, they could move him before, but I mean, it's certainly possible.
I would anticipate after the first kind of wave.
Well,
of
that
free agency.
Because that was the other thing that when you were talking about what would they do with 16. I would be interested to know if you're sitting there at 16, do you take a guard for the sake of taking a guard, or if you think that there's another front court player? Because that's the other thing. It's not like the Grizzlies are just sitting on a stockpile of front court players. Like, that was by far the thinnest position group last year. You've got a bunch of redundant, kind of small-ish guards. Are you also maybe looking at the free agent market?
Or
they're going to have some money.
Are you going to try and run a team with Ty Jerome as your... you know, as your de facto one with Scottie Pippen Jr. and Cam Spencer playing real minutes.
Well, and you could probably audition him for any deadline. Like, hey, who wants him at the deadline? Because if he plays anything like he did in the action that we saw this year, somebody I think would trade for him at the deadline next year.
Without a doubt. And then I guess, you know, you raise a question too on Walter Clay. The problem is I don't see any of the guards that they currently have. Let's say under team control. So let's exclude Ty Jerome from the conversation.
Okay.
I mean, do you see Scottie Pippen Jr., Cam Spencer, or Walter Clayton Jr. being your primary lead guard of the future? I mean, I think the answer to that in my mind is pretty clearly no.
I think the one I would be the closest on, and I tend to agree with you that I think my answer would still be no. Scottie, maybe.
I've always felt like
Scottie's a point guard just because of how tall he is. It's not like I don't think of him as a natural point guard.
Well, one thing that stuck in my mind when we talked to Chris last week, like a plus in the Keaton Wagler category is that his size allows you to play him with Scottie Pippen Jr. in a way that you might not feel the same way if it's Darius Acuff.
Yeah.
Just due to the height, right? And you could say the same
my
probably.
My boy's super long.
Okay.
He had a good, listen, Acuff had a good measurable day.
I haven't he done was, a full deep dive on he the
was,
guards.
He was big enough, and his wingspan was impressive.
Right. Well,
plays bigger than he is.
Defense. He doesn't play. He didn't have, play defense.
He played the role he was asked.
That's true. I won't fight you on that. And Scottie Pippen Jr. is a plus defender for a man of his size. So maybe in situations it could work, but I don't want to get into a playoff series. And
no, I think that's probably fair.
And maybe we're not there yet. Like, I don't think anyone's got grand illusions of this team being in the 2027 NBA playoffs. But nonetheless, like, you got to think about those things. But I mean, maybe right now, maybe you don't. Maybe you don't. Maybe you just get the best available in this draft. You let the chips fall where they may at the 27 deadline. You roll it out there with Ty Jerome in the interim. And then perhaps, you know, with whatever you're able to get back for him at next deadline, you parlay that into your next guard, right? So, I mean, do they have to answer that question? That's the other part of it. It's like, you would think so, because they have three of the top 32 picks in a really strong NBA draft. You would think, yeah, they do have to answer the lead guard question, especially when you have so many of them in this draft. But, I mean, with what their competitive timeline is, which I don't think is, oh, we got to make the 2027 playoffs or else, like, maybe you can slow play it a little bit and, you know, see what comes available.
I was also thinking about this, because I think you're 100% right. I think maybe more for the fans, there's the idea of get the guard and get the big. But I'm with you. If you can't move up and you're just sitting there at 16, don't force a guard for the sake of taking a guard. I would much rather see them do that at 32. Like, second
like
round,
Tyler Tanner,
whatever. Like, take the shot there. I would much rather see that. But I was also thinking, what do we think is going to be the value of these first round picks? Because the NBA is going to formally present the 3-2-1 thing today. And we're now going to be in the situation that what teams that finish 4 through 10. 4 through 10 get 3 balls.
Yep.
The 11, 12, 13, 14 get 2?
Yes. Or was
15
it
15 and 16 or 15?
Yeah, 15 and 16 get 1, and then don't 1, 2 and 3 also get 2?
I think they get 2, yeah.
Yeah.
They get punished. So I do think there's going to be kind of like a, how do you forecast out the value of a first? Because, like, what we had been seeing is teams were trying to target teams that they thought would suck.
But down the road, not.
But now, like, you got to, how do you forecast out who's going to finish somewhere in the 4 through 10 range at the bottom of the standings?
Oh, it's changed
like,
it a
who's
lot.
Who's going to be bad, but not bad enough?
The formula for calculating the value of a future draft pick is going to change if this goes through, which is a great, again, I say it, like, this is the draft to capitalize, right? But
I've decided I'm cool with 3-2-1.
Well,
like, does it solve the whole issue? Probably not, but I don't know how much. I still think the fundamental problem with the whole tanking and everything is, like, you have made it acceptable for guys to not play. I don't know how you get that back. It's like, once the die is cast, like, that's just here. So at least in this scenario, I do think you create a situation where you could have more good teams, because essentially you're offering up better picks to that kind of bottom part of the mushy middle.
Yeah.
And that could create more competitive teams. So I think I've just decided I'm cool with it.
I mean, at a certain point, we got to look at the size of the playoffs with the play-in as the primary issue here. because, look, I mean, what's the advantage to finishing in the top three of your conference? I mean, we're on the verge of seeing number one seed Detroit Pistons get bounced in the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs here by Cleveland. And it's like, all right, well, what did being the number one seed really earn them? I mean, because so many of these other teams who know they're going to be in the playoffs, they're not really worried about what seed they get. They're just going to let the chips fall where they may and then roll the ball out there in May and try to put their best foot forward.
Was it
and
better so for it, the Grizzlies to beat the Mavericks last year?
Well,
because think about it. If they lose to the Mavericks, they don't get swept by the Thunder, but more importantly, we don't kind of have like the final shock to the system of watching Morant get hurt again.
Yeah. I mean, you could say anything that would have prevented them from having to play the Thunder in the first round would have been better.
Right. They should have what they should have done was take the season more seriously than they did. Because remember, that was what was so frustrating about last season was there were so many games where it just felt like they were still experimenting, and you're like, so those games mattered.
I think my proposal is something along the lines of, and I haven't sat down to like sketch this out on a napkin, but let's give the number one or the number two seeds in each conference a first round bye or something, because you just get 20 teams into the postseason and there's no real benefit to having played a fantastic regular season. Therefore, there's no incentive to play your best basketball during the regular season. Therefore, guys sit out. It's like, well, at least give a reward to the teams that really thrive. Like make being good like something desirable instead of making it.
I think I got rid of it. Matt Moore on Twitter, Harvard Paroxysm, he had a nice like chart for dummies, like a bar graph of the average seed of finals participants by the decades. And it's like, you know, very low, like 70s, 80s, 90s, clearly like 1-2 seeds primarily. And then in the 2020s, it's like it just skyrockets.
Exactly. That, yeah, it's like, wow, what a Cinderella story. It's like, no, they just dicked around in the
Now, you could also, you can make this case. The Thunder had to go to 7 games twice last year. And by being the number one seed, they got both of them at home.
Well, that is a benefit to being a higher seeded team. You get home court advantage in a playoff series. I don't want to gloss over that, but it's akin to a home game matters, right? It's a difference between being 8 or 9 in the 12-team playoff, right? In college football, it's all right. Well, Tennessee had to go play at Ohio State.
Yep.
Maybe that game looks a little differently if they're switched. So, like, I don't want to say there's no advantage whatsoever, but in an era where we're trying to make the regular season matter, but yet we want 20 teams in the postseason, how do you incentivize those 20 who know they're going, or those 12 especially who know they're not going to be in the play-in? How do you incentivize being good, or not just being good, but like being great? You know, and that's part of the issue too, because it's like we thought this Oklahoma City Thunder team would be maybe, you know, in the realm of 70 plus victories, but what's the incentive? What's the, like, is it worth, is the juice worth the squeeze when you've got health concerns and load management and all this other stuff that we do now in the NBA? No, not really. We're going to be number one seed, probably 2 seed at worst if the Spurs are hot down the stretch, right? Like, what's it matter?
All right, speaking of 20 teams or more making the postseason, let's talk about college football, because now it appears the only holdout is the SEC. We'll talk about that next with Cobb right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Cobb, did you not get the invite to the Ritz-Carlton Amelia Island to go to ACC spring meetings?
It looks really nice.
Yeah, turns out might be a decent spot to go. So the news from earlier this week is that the ACC, air quotes, unanimously agreed to vote in favor of the 2014 playoff. We've also learned this week that Notre Dame supports the 2014 playoff, which now means the only real holdout is the SEC. Now, the question I think becomes, is it the SEC holding out, or is it by proxy the SEC in doing the bidding of Disney, ABC, and ESPN.
Did stop the ACC.
Did not, but also one's a bigger customer. Using your example last week of how can you keep your number one stakeholders happy for the NCAA tournament, the SEC is a bigger stakeholder in ESPN than the ACC is. I think it's interesting, though, because are we at the point where the SEC is hanging on for no real purpose? Because it feels like if you're outvoted 9-1, it doesn't matter. Now, yeah, granted, like, I guess you could make this argument. It's not really 9-1.
It's 1-1. It's the Big Ten and the SEC.
Right.
So, I mean, it's the equivalent of a filibuster in Congress where you're just holding out. You know they can't do it without you. So, what is there to gain for the SEC from holding out and being the ones to stop this? Like what are they afraid of with expansion? Why at this point would they be opposed to it? I'm struggling to find the reasons for that.
I think the simplest answer is the right answer. ESPN doesn't want it.
Yeah, and that's their biggest partner.
I mean, they're essentially, you know, like that is their number one provider of revenue.
But it's also interesting that ESPN doesn't want it because it seems like the impetus for expansion is for there to be more TV revenue, which comes from having more TV inventory, which comes from selling more TV ads. It seems like that's something ESPN would be interested in.
So if it goes to 24, I believe they'd have to take it to market again. And so ESPN would then have to, what ESPN likes right now is they control it. Like it's not, I think there's this miscalculation that ESPN is worried about Fox getting games. I don't think that's the case. They're already sub-licensing some of the playoff games to Turner.
Right.
I do think what they don't want is to have to sit there and go when they know that they're gonna, the NFL's basically already told everybody, pony up again. I don't think they want to have to sit there and go and bid on the college football playoff again.
Not to mention they program their entire regular season to be a college football playoff hype show. So they got to go back to the drawing board from a production standpoint on what do we talk about on game day? What do we talk about in the third quarter of a blowout? Because right now, all they talk about is the playoff, and they choose their games they're going to put on primetime slots based on the playoff implications. And
well,
you expand to 24, and you're not in possession of a lot of those games or maybe any of them. Well, all of a sudden, it's like, dadgum, we've been the primary drivers behind the playoff, and now it's not even ours anymore.
Listen, I know these are not the primary concern, but I also don't think it's a zero on a pie chart. They don't have to pay additionally to have the SEC championship game, the ACC championship game, and the Big 12 championship game. And those are, if it's just part of what you're already paying the league and you're making money off of it, well, if we go to the 2014 playoff, you're getting rid of those, and now you're adding more games that you are going to have to bid on.
Yeah, makes sense. I know why the ACC went against ESPN, because if you go out and extrapolate to what a 2014 playoff would have looked like this past season, the ACC also gets in Georgia Tech, Virginia, there's two more right there, Georgia Tech and Virginia, that didn't make the playoff, that would make the playoff if it expanded. So that makes it a pretty easy, you know, well, yeah, we should do this because we're going to double, or in this case, actually triple our number of teams that make the field.
I don't know the answer to this, but I'm curious to know your thoughts. It seems pretty obvious right now. Most people in athletics want the expansion. Do we know what the presidents want? And the reason why I ask this is, so I was on my old boss, Neil McCready, and Chase Parham's show today. And Neil made the point, while a lot of athletics people are unhappy with Greg Sankey, he's not convinced that the presidents are. And in the end, that's kind of who he answers to the most. And so the only other alternative I can think of to your question of what's the holdup, I can see a universe where presidents really don't want it.
Well, it's funny because they were all behind more opportunities for the student athletes when it came to NCAA tournament expansion. Oh, but we don't want those same opportunities for football players? That seems a little bit out of whack.
I'm guessing the answer to that would be, well, we know it's more money to figure out how to divvy up.
Yeah. Whereas with basketball, you had to find some reason to say why you were behind it because it wasn't the money.
Right.
It was, you know, it's the access. But you think about a 24-team format and a 9-game SEC schedule where the college football playoff properly prioritizes strength of schedule. I mean, we could see a world where half the SEC is just written into this thing every year. You would think that would be appealing to the league because it's a 16-team conference with a lot of really good teams. You would think having half your league in there would be an appealing thing.
I do think they don't want to get rid of the championship game. They being the office, I should specify that. I also think a big part of this is when your number one moneymaker, which is ESPN and your TV deal, when they say jump, you've essentially established the position how high.
I mean, they're in bed together for a long time. So,
and I mean, yeah, it hasn't been a bad deal, but I also
Big Ten rich.
No, it's not. Now they didn't take it to multiple providers. Like that's the other aspect of it. But SEC fans don't have to wonder where they're finding the games.
True.
Now, is that the trade-off? I think if you ask most Big Ten people, would they rather have the money or have confusion about where to find their games? And they said, yeah, give me the money. But I've also thought about this week. So obviously the Kiffin comments blow up, but you also had Sarkisian going after underwater basket weaving at Ole Miss.
In the same offseason when Clemson attacked Ole Miss as well. I mean, you've got the Clemson, Texas, and LSU all coming after your Ole Miss with pitchforks.
And I'm not even looking at this from the Ole Miss is a target perspective, but what I find fascinating is this is member schools attacking member schools publicly. Is that a sign of, hey man, we think the king of the castle, we ain't scared of him? Like, is this a bad look for Sankey in the sense that you can't get your own house in order?
Well, for the longest time, like that's what held the SEC back. It was the interconference snitching, like, and then they finally got that under control. I mean, you remember, I think the last like major big high profile, well, there've been a few, but like that's been a big issue like in past generations for the league is, look guys, we're a rising tide lifts all boats here. Let's try to support
it was
each
always
other.
Like if Auburn went on probation, set your watch to it. Alabama was up next. The Mississippi schools turning themselves in, like, you know,
come to us privately. Come to the league office or go to Kramer or Slive or Sankey in private. Don't make a big deal out of this to the NCAA. Don't air this publicly when you get a call from a reporter. Like, let's handle this stuff internally and work to be the best league we can be. And for the longest time, that paid dividends. Well, now all of a sudden, it's like the SEC's kind of lost its footing a little bit. And yeah, we're turning on Ole Miss, which I don't know if you saw Sudu had a really good thread the other day about it, but it's funny. It's like when Ole Miss is the 7-5 occasional peak year sort of non-threat that we were accustomed to pre-Lane Kiffin, everybody viewed Ole Miss as like the, oh, they're cute. They're the embodiment of the William Faulkner, and they've turned themselves into a positive version of what Southern culture means. But the second Ole Miss becomes a threat and is playing with the big boys, well, now all of a sudden, it's not this genteel, non-threatening bastion of Southern culture. We're reverting to the ugly past now to characterize Ole Miss because they're a threat and we're in recruiting battles with them, and they've got a product on the field that can compete with our product on the field. And so in a league that has Georgia, Texas, Alabama, LSU, Texas, Texas A&M, we can't afford for Ole Miss to be in that conversation. So let's just get off our easy shots because they are easier to take on Ole Miss. Even though, Jeffrey, I think every school in the Southeastern Conference to a certain degree has the same path. I mean, it was the slowest to integration. Every state within the Southeastern Conference footprint really struggled with
integration. There's nothing more ironic than SEC schools pointing the finger about race relations at other SEC schools. It's like, this is the ultimate glass houses.
Have you ever read about the history of Arkansas or Alabama or Georgia? This is not a unique, like, was it worse in Mississippi? Yes, it was. But was it really bad in all of those other states as well? Yes, it was.
Yes.
And so why is Mississippi the one that, and the answer to that is because they're a threat now. They're a threat now. So we're going to bring up all this stuff to try to neutralize it.
So I also think I'm not as convinced that it is we got to eliminate the threat of the disruptor. I'm not as convinced on that. My working theory is that, I don't know how much you've kept up with the Pete Golding, Clemson, George, I always forget the kid's name, the linebacker, played at Fresno.
Luke Farelli.
Fellow Italian.
Pete Golding's going to have to get punished somehow. Like, in the end, he was caught tampering on his own phone. My working theory is that everybody senses that's a vulnerability. And, hey, if you can eliminate the threat that way and start piling on and bringing more public attention, that you could do that. What I have found curious, Pete Golding's from the Nick Saban School of Wayward Boys too. And unlike Sark and Lane, he played by Nick's rules. Like, when he left Alabama, he waited till after signing day. Like, he did everything by the book. He's also a CAA client, just like all the rest of them are. But it seems like he is out of, like, the privileged class of Saban people.
Well, I think part of the issue is he doesn't clap back. When Lane gets his jabs off and his little punches and his little digs, Pete just laughs and said, oh, this is Lane being Lane. He's a troll. Nah, man, at this point, I'd be clapping back a little bit. All right, you want to air some of our dirty laundry? Lord knows he's got a book on Lane. I mean, he worked with him for however many years. Half the LSU staff Pete worked with at Ole Miss.
So,
like,
I think,
okay, you want to play dirty, Lane?
I think
you
that's play happened. I think that's happened. I just think it didn't happen publicly. Well, I don't think it was a coincidence that Lane ended up giving that the apology.